Any good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a glorious day to this point. It's sunny and beautiful down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. I'm Darren McFarland. Willie Donick is hanging over in East Nashville. Hopefully it's sunny and beautiful over there. Chase McKay, parts unknown. It's usually sunny and beautiful wherever he is.
Elijah it's Campbell, sunny and beautiful in Bellevue.
In Bellevue. And Elijah Campbell is back at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how we doing? I don't really need to ask Chase, because after last night, we know how he's doing.
I'm feeling great.
I bet you are.
It's game day times two. So I'm feeling great.
We've got 16 Braves guests scheduled for today, so we will only talk Atlanta Braves, even though the Titans are playing the Bills. Chase has scheduled 16 Braves guests.
That's so. Right. Yeah, that's what happens when you want to let me book. That's you're going to get all Braves all the time. NASCAR, we'll mix some of that in.
Maybe segment we'll get to one. Titans. Segment one will be a recap of the game. Segment two will be Walker Buehler's pants. Segment three will be a scouting report on Clayton Kershaw. I mean, we got it all. 16 segments, all Braves, all the time.
Yeah, where's the Dodgers fan? Where's Marquise? Where's he at? I haven't heard from him today.
I would say Dodgers fans have a little bit of a thing called tight butt right now.
Yeah, but it's one game.
Cheeks are clenched.
It's one game. And
yeah, but there's a history. That's the point.
I know. I know. Clayton Kershaw.
They have a history of, yeah, kind of.
But there's no history with, you know, Anderson. He's had two playoff starts, and so I mean, who knows? I'm waiting for that rookie wall, and I hope that doesn't come. But you know, I'm nervous too. It's just one game at a time. You got the first one under the belt, but not having Duvall, that's gonna hurt. That's a big loss because his bat has been hot. So we'll see what they do there. Pablo Sandoval and all 800 pounds of him came in last night. So
I could not believe. Like I had to do like a quadruple take.
I'm going to be.
I honestly didn't know he was on the Braves.
I didn't either. I had no clue. I didn't know he was in baseball. I didn't even know he was in Major League Baseball.
I knew he was in the league. I knew he was on the Giants to start the year, but I just didn't know.
I was like, who is that
again? The Braves picked him up.
I know they said that's Sandoval, but it's a big, gigantic guy that looks like he plays softball, and his last name is Sandoval. Like, no, that's not Pablo. No.
That's
not the panda.
It's not the panda. No. What?
They picked him up in September. So I kid you not, I'm watching, and he gets hit by the pitch. I thought it hit him in the stomach. The first time,
fell on the ground if it did.
Well, I mean, I was like, did that just hit him in the gut? Like, I literally thought that. But, yeah, he's a big boy. He's a big boy.
In all seriousness, we are going to talk Braves in the next segment. Chip Carey is going to join us, and we will talk about last night's thriller. And Braves opened it up in the ninth inning and take game one of the NLCS. So we'll talk to Chip Carey coming up at 10:15. We'll learn a little bit more about the Titans' opponent. And, yes, it looks like, indeed, the Titans and Bills will suit up and play tonight at 6 o'clock. We'll head up to Buffalo to start the second hour of the program. Reports I saw Dan Graziano, if there's somebody else and I missed it. Guys, help me. That was the first I saw put out there that the Titans had zero positive tests, so the game is on for tonight. So John Robinson spoke after our show yesterday. The media got about an hour and a half heads up that the GM was going to speak yesterday, so he spoke after our show. And so it looks like that game is going to happen tonight.
Yeah, and that's I'm glad. I mean, it's closing the chapter of a very long one. And not a good one, but, you know, we'll see what the NFL still comes out with. I heard, I believe it was Charles Robinson this morning from Yahoo Sports with Robbie and Joe, that he believes what we've been hearing, that the NFL is going to come down on the Titans. But tonight you just worry about trying to go 4-0. And it's a very, very large task because of the players that are going to be missing, but it would appear, according to some reports, that Taylor Lewan and A.J. Brown will be suiting up. So that's big.
That indeed is big. So, by the way, and it kind of looks like Mike Florio's doing a little work in the secondary right now, because it looks like he's backpedaling a little bit on his strong comments last week.
Well, I think the more that is shared. I thought that maybe you guys have a different take, but I enjoyed listening to John Robinson's commentary. Pretty level-headed. Did say, you know, and I think this is any football game you watch, right? This is the case. Any sporting event you go to, that I think it's safe to say that everybody could do a better job wearing the masks, right? And he admitted as such, right? It's hard to stay on everybody all the time. And
we've
I think that's a very
all
reasonable.
Out of the car and didn't forget our, you know.
Yeah, it's a very
point,
reasonable
like,
thing.
Oh, crap, got to go back and get the mask. Yeah. Sure.
Other than that, he has been very consistent with Mike Vrabel saying that, you know, they feel like they've communicated, they feel like they have followed the protocols. So the whole narrative that came out with a lot of finger pointing at the Titans have stood pretty firm that they were not negligent in any way. And I have not seen a lot of follow-up reports saying, hey,
that's
you know, the hammer is going to drop. So when everybody was really, the walls seemed to be closing in at one point last week, I'm not sure what the NFL found when they came in, but the fact that other tests have popped up in other places, they've had to move other games. I don't know. It's a hard, I think the reality is setting into the NFL. They thought they were strong enough to be able to beat this thing perfectly without any hiccups. I think we find out with this virus that it is very, very hard to control.
Well,
it is inevitable that stuff is going to pop up.
That doesn't excuse the practice that they shouldn't have had at NBA, okay, the get-together. That doesn't excuse that. Yes, everything you said is 100% true, but let's not forget the fact that that came after, you know, they knew they weren't supposed to have that. And so, therefore, you know, that can't be excused. Yes, I don't like the pointing blame. I've already said it many, many times on the show. One, we think that it's only associated with bars, you know, and parties, and that's not how it works. This virus, yeah, you must have been doing something bad if you tested positive. That's not that whole, you know, how we that narrative that we associate that's the only way you got it is if you were doing something bad is ridiculous. But let's also say that, you know, that shouldn't have taken place either. And I do think that's the reason I brought it up. There seems to be a lot of backpedaling on the very, very strong reports, which, you know, in the moment last week, when that is the topic, the Titans are getting all the discussion. For all the people who want the Titans to be discussed on a national platform, that happened all last week for the wrong reasons. You know, it was the wrong way that they're talking about your Tennessee Titans, but you can't when you look at how this is played out, that's how those places, whether it's Mike Florio or anybody else, that's how you get attention, that's how you get clicks, that's how you get people to come to your material, because you put that stuff out there and that's where immediately people are going to go. Where today, as we sit here on Tuesday morning, I haven't seen any of that stuff yesterday, Sunday, haven't seen anything since the Titans have been testing positive about the hammer is coming down. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel could be lost for the season. They're going to lose a first-round draft pick. They're going to get fined millions of dollars. Where are those articles today?
Well, those articles were very hyperbolic, I think. When you saw them, there was one article from USA Today saying shut down the whole season, take them out of the mix. Florio, who came on Jared and the GM, he did clarify it, right? He said, this is not me, and this is not inside information. It was somebody on another team who just was weighing in. So right then and there, it should have been
taken at face value, which means
right, which he made
nothing.
Clear in the interview, which he
yes.
made clear in
and
the
that's
interview.
Fine. Yeah, that's
and
fine.
So, but when you see a headline like that, and it's coupled with a lot of other people, the biggest one to me that probably needs to come back is Adam Schefter. He's the one that really started the narrative. Unnamed sources saying that from the league they violated the protocols. That to me is the biggest one that I'd like to see followed up on. It's gotten awfully quiet. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe there still will be some ramifications that they did violate protocols.
Right.
So we don't know yet. But it is interesting how it's kind of just quieted down as there's been other things around the league that have popped up.
Well, I mean, Charles Robinson was on the morning show and did say that he's still hearing that there would be punishment.
Did he elaborate on?
Well, we're trying to pull that clip so
what
I can,
he's hearing.
Yeah, so I can not take it out of context.
Honestly, a punishment could be anything.
Sure, I mean it could be a draft pick, it could be a fine, it could be a suspension, it could be hey, don't ever do that again.
Right,
I mean,
it could be
a
hand slap. Sure.
Right. So I mean, it could be a lot of different things. The point is they're going to play. And now you got to move on. And I agree with what Willie said. John Robinson, I thought, was about as transparent as he could be. He couldn't answer every question, and I thought he was truthful of that. He even said, I'm not trying to dodge any of the punishment questions, but it's still an ongoing investigation, and I'm not allowed to speak on it. And I believe that. I think that is the truth. Now, when is the league going to let somebody speak on it? That's what I want to know. The league tends to drag their feet, and now they've brought in independent investigators and things like that, and they just want to drag this thing on. And are they gonna do this behind the scenes, and it just all of a sudden come out, oh, the Titans have been hit with they're losing a first round pick, and then not explain it? I think this is such a unique situation that the league should have some formal press conference or something that's more in depth than a statement of saying what's going on, but who knows if that'll actually happen.
Well, what we do know is going to happen is it looks like this game is going to happen tonight. And so we'll get into a lot of stuff concerning the Titans and Bills on today's show. But when we come back, Chip Carey is the voice of the Atlanta Braves. They have taken game one of the NLCS against the Dodgers. Three more wins away from a trip to the World Series. So we'll talk to Chip Carey on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks, Ryan. We agree. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this beautiful Tuesday morning here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We now say hello to the voice of the Atlanta Braves. Chip Carey is on the line with us. Braves take game one, an exciting ninth inning. Braves tack on four runs in a tie ball game to take game one and walk away with the 5-1 victory over the Dodgers. They'll be right back at it. Game two is today. It'll be at 5 o'clock our time, and Braves trying to see if they can grab a 2-0 lead in that series. Chip, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us. There was so much storyline about this Atlanta Braves team. You know, everybody knew they could hit. Everybody knew they had offense, but there was so much concern about their pitching going into this postseason play, and wow, I don't think anybody, or maybe you're going to tell me I'm wrong, anybody could have seen this coming, that the way they have pitched in postseason play has been lights out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the performances that we're seeing were maybe kind of hiding in plain sight, especially in the case of Max Fried and Ian Anderson. The revelation of and the evaluation of, or the evolution, I should say, of Kyle Wright has been great to see over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But look, they pitched well, and these kids know that this is a huge challenge, getting through this playoff run with three established starters. They know that, but they also look at it as a huge opportunity, and I'm really proud of them and excited for the future of the franchise, seeing these guys step into these squared circles, as it were, and pitch and compete as hard and as effectively as they've done against some very good lineups. So I think Braves Country is awfully proud of what's happened so far. But as Brian Snitker has said, it's all about checking off boxes. The Braves have checked off two, winning their first two series. They've got to get three more wins to check off a very big box and knock off the Dodgers. And while it's exciting to be up one game to none, I think everybody in that Braves locker room and everybody in the Braves organization understands there's still a whole lot more work to do starting tonight against Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, no doubt. And you brought up Kyle Wright, and obviously folks in this market, we've been following Kyle Wright since he was at Vanderbilt. What do you think has kind of turned a corner for him? Because there was a lot of concern, at least from us, watching, like, why isn't it translating? What we saw in college, why isn't it translated? Everybody knows he's got the big arm, but it's just not translating at the highest level yet. What do you think has happened, as you mentioned, in kind of this last 3-week window?
this is my own personal opinion. I think that Kyle Wright and analytics got him away from, made him the fifth overall pick in the draft. And the things that made him such a good picture and attractive guy, he got away from. He was throwing fastballs up in the zone. That's not his game. He was throwing sliders. That's not his game. He's a sinker, curveball kind of guy with a good changeup. He moved to the first base side of the rubber, and that made all of those pitches open up for him. And obviously, when you have success, you gain confidence. And when you get confident, you have more success. The frustrating thing watching Kyle Wright pitch this year was he'd blow through a lineup the first time using his good fastball, and then all of a sudden get slider happy and made an adjustment when he didn't need to. I think so many young pitchers get to the major leagues, and Tom Glavine's talked about this. They feel like they have to be better than they have to be to get hitters out, and as a result, they squeeze the ball a little tighter and try to throw the ball a little harder and try to make the perfect pitch with every pitch, and it usually ends up in a disastrous fashion for them. And I think that's what happened to Kyle. He got away from his strengths, and as a result, kept getting beaten up night after night and couldn't make an adjustment and couldn't figure out why. I think that's changed. I think he had a chat with Josh Tomlin. I think that move to the first base side of the rubber opened up things for him. And obviously, he's had success, and he's learned how to pitch into and out of trouble, finally, instead of just getting knocked out after two or three innings. There are some who say he has the best stuff on this staff, and considering what we've seen in the playoffs, that's quite a compliment. So I think we're all really looking forward to seeing him following up what he did in his first playoff start, doing it again against the Dodgers, and hopefully continuing to do it as his career moves forward. He's a great kid. We're all big fans of him down here in Atlanta, and we want him to be successful. And I think the best way for him to be successful is to do what he does best and not just rely on what the numbers think he should do.
Chip, we joked in the first segment of the show about we didn't even know this guy was on the Braves roster. I'll admit on the front end, I'm a TV snob, so I really like nice TVs and high definition and 4K and right. All that good stuff. So I've got big TVs in the house, and when I was sitting there looking, my vision as I get older is getting worse, and I'm looking at the screen going, well, here's this big guy. It looks like Panda. My goodness, they just put Sandoval up on the screen. I know I'm reading this correctly. That can't be. No, that can't be. I didn't even know he was still in baseball, and last night he makes a plate appearance. Pablo Sandoval, when did that happen? What did I miss?
About 2 weeks, 3 weeks left in the season. The Braves signed him after he was released from the Giants. They sent him down to the alternate site for a situation exactly like this. Look, the Braves and the Dodgers, everybody has expanded rosters. You've got 28 players that you can utilize during the game, but there's also a 12-man taxi squad that's available. And the reason for that is with no minor leagues, you have to keep guys in some semblance of baseball shape in case you have an injury. And unfortunately, last night, the Braves suffered a big blow. Adam Duvall got hurt. He pulled an oblique. I don't know if he's going to be able to play anytime soon. So Atlanta's going to have to make a roster move and replace Adam on this 28-man roster. But you saw all the permutations of a guy going down and how many things can be created by that domino effect. You had to bring Charlie Culberson in, who had one plate appearance since August 21st, and that was last night. You had Panda, who played the last game of the regular season and now is playing in game one of the series against the Dodgers. You had Riley, who's been your everyday third baseman, moving to the outfield. You had Acuna shuffling left, right, and center and playing all three outfield spots in the game last night. So, credit the Braves. They've been very proactive in going out and getting guys to create organizational depth. And I think that's the one thing that's very different about this Braves team in 2020 as opposed to the last time they played the Dodgers. Look, in 2018, the baseball gods tapped Atlanta on the shoulder and said, this is your year. You won the division. Go to the playoffs and figure this out. They were just happy to be there. I think the Braves, after last season, have some unfinished business. They're still stung by losing to the Cardinals. And I think they have a much greater palette of depth to pull from should something go awry going forward in the playoffs. And I think that's ultimately going to benefit them. Look, the Dodgers are thought to have the most depth and be the most balanced team in baseball. The Braves went toe-to-toe with them last night and showed just what they can do in situations like that as well, which gives you a lot of hope.
We're talking to Chip Carey, television voice, Atlanta Braves, Fox Sports South. Chip, it's great to talk to you. Great to have your perspective after such a big win. I know a lot of people in our area are watching closely here. You just illustrated what they did in the short term last night when they lost Adam Duvall. If they replace him on the roster, what's your best guess as to how they'll go about it? You mentioned the versatility of Riley they can play with there. Culberson can play a lot of different places. Is there a player that they could activate that would help fill those holes? Or how do you think they would roll?
Well, this is just a guess, but I would think Johan Camargo would be the first choice. Look, Ender Inciarte is a Gold Glove defender, but he's had a terrible year offensively. I don't know what's happened to his bat, and I don't know that he would be the first option. I may be totally wrong about that. Obviously, defense is hugely important in the playoffs. If you wanted to go that route, you put Ender in center, Acuna in right, and you can play Riley in left or Markakis in left. But Nick has really looked lost at the plate in the playoffs and is not swinging the bat well against left-handers, so I wouldn't think he would play tonight. If you do bring up Inciarte, then you could play Charlie Culberson at third. You could play Panda at third base, and you'd have Riley in left. If you bring in Camargo, well, that changes the dynamic quite dramatically. You could play Camargo at third, Riley in left. You could have Markakis in right, and you could have Acuna in center if you wanted to. So there are a whole lot of options for the Braves, but again, it goes back to that outfield depth. All of a sudden, they get a little short when a guy like Duvall goes down with injury. So I think that'll be fascinating to see what they do. But the fact for me that Johan Camargo can switch hit gives you an option off the bench that's a little unique, along with Sandoval. I think that would be the route that they go, but I've been wrong more than I've been right, and if I had to make a second guess, I'd guess they'd go with the defensive ender and take their chances, but he's a left-handed bat against Clayton Kershaw. I don't know if that helps him tonight. We'll see.
Chip, one thing that is fascinating to me, and I think you've seen it, the bullpen has been so good for the Braves really throughout this whole process, even when they've had some issues with the start, big issues with the starting staff, with depth.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it crazy how a guy like Tyler Matzek, who you wouldn't have had on the radar at the beginning of the season, has become just a lights-out great story. Same thing, Mark Melancon for a couple years, arm trouble, was kind of lost, and then you know he's been rock solid as the closer. And there's so many stories like that in the Braves bullpen. The next thing you know, You've got a group that can probably match anybody.
Well, that's exactly right. I think what a lot of folks were concerned about was, oh, how's the three-batter rule going to force the hands of managers? How will he work around that? How will the relievers deal with that? I think the Braves are uniquely positioned in that they don't have matchup relievers. The lefties can get out righties, and the righties can get lefties out. So the three-batter rule really hasn't come up at all as an impediment for success for the Braves this year. And to the larger point, these guys that the Braves have, they've been good players. You figure that with the right coaching, and if they can get their head on straight and have some confidence, like I said with Kyle Wright, they can figure it out. And Tyler Matzek did. Remember, he was the number one pick. He made his debut against the Braves with the Rockies and beat them 5 or 6 years ago out in Colorado. So the talent is there. It's just a matter of maturity and figuring things out and relaxing and knowing that they can go out and get the job done. And that's really the case with all those guys. And what excites us about this Braves bullpen is you don't have to rely just on Mark Melancon if you need to close a game out. Will Smith can close for you. Shane Green can close for you. Chris Martin can close for you. Matzek could close for you. A.J. Minter can close for you. So the Braves really are positioned uniquely to use a closer in the sixth inning of a tight game if they need to put out a fire, and then continue to use guys in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings to wrap up a ball game. So no doubt about it, the bullpen is a huge strength of this team. Nobody could have foreseen a pandemic. Nobody could have foreseen all the injuries the Braves would have had in rotation. But one thing that we have learned over the years is that in postseason baseball, it becomes a bullpen game. And the Braves have done an excellent job of stacking their bullpen to help create and formulate a game plan that's very, very simple. Hard to execute, but very simple to understand. Get five innings out of your starter, get the lead, and turn it over to those waves and waves of relief pitchers to finish out the game. And knock on wood, to this point, they've done it not only during the regular season, but throughout this undefeated postseason as well.
We're talking to Chip Carey, the voice of the Braves, Fox Sports South. And Chip, I've heard you say this before, that this team, they may not be winning. They may get to the ninth, and they just won't die. They won't go away. And maybe they don't come away with the win, but a lot of times they do. We saw that again last night. How much of that do you attribute to Brian Snitker, their skipper, and just he's been with the organization for so long, and just the mentality that he's instilled with these players?
That's a really great point. And the term I use is they don't always win, but they always give you a finish. This is a Braves team that doesn't die until you get that 27th out. And we saw that in the ninth inning last night. The three extra base hits, I think, all came with two strikes. This is a tough team to put away. They'll strike out and they'll be exasperating, and boy, were they ever for eight innings offensively last night, but they somehow, some way find a way to get it done when the game matters most. I think that Brian Snitker is an incalculably valuable piece of this puzzle for the Braves. I think fans forget when he came in, Atlanta was a mess. They're in the midst of their rebuild. He took over for Freddie Gonzalez. The Braves were like 15-27 or some crazy number like that, playing awful, rudderless, in need of a change, in need of a new voice. And Brian was brought in as the interim manager. And if you remember in that 2015 season, I think it was, Brian almost led this team to a 500 record. And considering how bad that club was, that was remarkable work. Then through the rebuild to go 72-90 and then the next year 90-72 says all you need to know about the kind of leader he is, the kind of philosophies he's implemented, the carryover from the Bobby Cox years, all of that stuff. Not to mention the fact that a lot of these guys played for him in the minor leagues and know him as a person. He's one of the best people I've ever been around in the game. He knows the game. He represents this organization so fantastically well. And as much credit as the players get for their rightful place in baseball history and what they've done over the last couple of years, anyone that does not give Brian Snitker his due, I think, is making a fatal mistake. He'll go down as one of the great leaders at a great time when the franchise needed it in the history of this franchise. And I'm really, really proud of the job he's done, and even prouder to call him a friend.
With the bullpen and the depth on this team, they obviously have some momentum going right now with how they've started off the postseason. Do you think that benefits the Braves not having days off in this series?
I think time will tell. I think it depends on how far the starters go. I think the big question for Atlanta is going to come in Game 4 and Game 5. What do they do? And that will be predicated on what happens in the first three games of the series. Look, the Dodgers have four or five or six guys that can start games for them that are established starters. The Braves don't have that luxury. And again, when you factor in that Max Fried is the only man standing out of the original starting five in this Braves rotation in the playoffs, and yet they're still here and are seven wins away from winning a World Series, I think is absolutely remarkable. I think we're going to have a bullpen game in Game 4, and if the Braves have a commanding lead, if they're up 3-1 in that series going into Game 5, you might see the Braves roll the dice and go with another bullpen game in Game 5 and then have your starters come back on regular rest. And that's, again, a decision that the Braves will have to make. It's a new wrinkle. It's a new fact of the game with no days off in the LCS. But let's face it, this is no different than a regular season where you play 14 days in a row, or 20 days in 21 games like the Braves did the first 3 weeks of the season. You just have to manage your bullpen smartly, and Brian's been able to do that. And Lord knows he had tons of experience in the regular season of seeing his starters go three innings or four innings. So mixing and matching for five innings is old hat to him. I don't take this lightly, but he has done this before. He's done it a lot, and he's done it very successfully. So I don't feel that there's any great concern about navigating a couple of games if you have to pitch a bullpen game or two.
We know about the homegrown players on this roster, Chip, but how big was it to find a player like Travis d'Arnaud that has come in and he's a reclamation project, he's fit, he's done well behind the plate, and also his bat is getting the job done?
Yeah, he's a guy that a lot of the Braves front office people knew and knew very well. Sal Fasano coached him in Double A when he was with the Blue Jays organization. Alex Anthopoulos traded for him. There's a track record there. The rap on Travis was he just wasn't able to stay healthy. Remember, he had Tommy John surgery. He was always banged up. And finally, last year, he got to Tampa Bay and just started raking and did a great job. And that offense has certainly carried over. And as you guys were alluding earlier, the fun thing about the playoffs is it's always an unlikely guy who turns out to be the big star. And d'Arnaud in the last round certainly was that guy for the Braves. He was pretty much a one-man wrecking crew against the Marlins. He's an athlete. He's terrific behind the plate. He and Tyler Flowers work hand-in-hand very well, handling this young staff. And the other factor I think that's very important, too, is that Travis has been through the wars. He's played in the World Series before. He knows what it takes. He knows the importance of every single pitch, every single play. And he doesn't take any of it lightly, and I'm not suggesting any of the other Braves players do. So he's a veteran. He's another guy that's plugged in and has fit in exceptionally well. And look, if you hit, you play well. It's easy to fall in love with the guy, and he's done a fantastic job.
I'm not going to ask you who you've got in this series. I think we know who you've got in this series. But who do you have in Georgia, Alabama Saturday night?
Dogs all the way. Come on, man.
I know. I just want to hear you say it.
After that butt kicking we put on the Volunteers, how can you not take Georgia? Sorry, bring that up.
You went there. Okay.
It's going to be a great game. And, it'll be a fun diversion. It'd be wonderful if the Braves could have this series wrapped up by Saturday so I could sit back with a cold one and enjoy that one. But, look, I'm just so excited for our team and for our players, and more importantly for our fans. The hardest part of this season for us in the broadcast world is not having the fans around at the ballpark. I cannot tell you how much energy and emotion and passion and love we get from them just by watching them watch the games. And the fact that they had fans in the ballpark last night, I thought was awesome. I wish there were more of them. I feel very certain that we're going to have fans in the stadiums next year in some capacity. At least, you know, it may be small to start, but building as we go. And the players fed off that energy last night. And again, the only downer for me in this is that our fans can't get to Truist Park and watch the games in person, because this is a team that really has captured a lot of people's imaginations. They have a ball. They have a lot of fun. They are fun to watch. And I know that our fans in Braves country are really proud of them. I hope that'll continue to be the case. And we'll just keep following them as long as they go. And hopefully 2020, in this craziest of years in our history, this will be the Braves' year, and it'll be the first of many to come.
Yeah, I heard Freddie Freeman talking about actually having the fans and how tired they were of the piped-in crowd noise, and it was refreshing.
You know, they were doing the Tomahawk Chop in Texas last night. Yeah. I mean, all that stuff was great. And look, we as you guys know, we do our jobs for the fans, and the players perform for the fans, and we feed off that energy. We love that energy, and I know the Braves are feeling it from afar, even though the folks can't get to the ballpark. So believe me, from the bottom of my heart, for those of us at Fox and even for the Braves organization and the players themselves, we really, really appreciate it. It means the world to us.
Well, we appreciate this visit. I hope that everything is taken care of. Game 6 is scheduled for Saturday. Hopefully everything is wrapped up so you can sit back, relax, and enjoy the game Saturday night. But we do appreciate you coming on. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, guys. My pleasure. Stay well. We'll see you hopefully as this round continues and move on to the World Series. We'll talk again.
All right. Sounds good. That is play-by-play man for the Atlanta Braves, Chip Carey, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good conversation there with Chip Carey of the Braves. They take game one last night over the Dodgers with four runs in the ninth. Don't forget ESPN The Game Nashville has your coverage of the MLB playoffs. Of course, the championship series of both leagues. Presented by Gary Force Acura. 102.5 The Game has game three of the ALCS series. Rays and Astros on 94.9. And we'll be carrying game two of the Braves and Dodgers as well. So this is going to be your home to catch these games. I watched both yesterday. I was watching Rays and Stros after we got off the air. Boy,
how about the Rays?
Houston made it interesting in the ninth. Man, it was 4-1. It looks like everything is set up for a cruise victory. No. Houston made it incredibly difficult for the Rays to get out of that, but they've taken the first two games, and they're up 2-0 in that series.
Well, if you watch the games, I think if you're Dusty Baker, you say, man, either the baseball gods are against us, or sooner or later, the law of averages says they're going to get a big hit. It seems like they have first and second every inning. They just can't get a big hit. It's two straight games where the Rays are doing their thing. They get the four. It's funny now, like if you go five innings as a starter, it's like, man, great start, man, way to go. You got five innings, you know, but you can't blame them. It's like they wear you down. You get 90 or 100 pitches after five innings, and you don't have a choice. But that's the modern game of baseball. Work the count, get the pitch count up. You're going to strike out a bunch. Maybe you draw a few walks. Then it gets into the bullpen, and you hope over the course of the night you get two or three big home runs. That was the story in both games yesterday, right? You go through stretches where you're like, nobody can hit. Nobody can touch this thing. And all of a sudden, bang, like 450-foot home run, it seems like, by Mike Zunino or Austin Riley, or it could be anybody that's in there. But I give the Rays all kinds of credit. They've been able to get the key outs every single time they need it. But I think, Chase, you asked the question to Chip. That is also going to be a big, big difference here. With the starting pitching as thin as it is, and pitchers just not able to go, they just can't figure out ways to go 7-8 innings. Playing every day without a day off is going to be huge in games 3, 4, 5, 6, right? They're going to get into a jam. It's one thing to do that in a 2 out of 3. It's another thing 3 out of 5. But 4 out of 7 is when it really starts to catch up. in your third series. This is going to be really interesting. Who can hang on doing it this way, using all those bullpen arms two nights in a row, three nights in a row? How long can you go?
Well, and that's just where the bullpen depth is really going to come into play. And I, as a Braves fan, I feel pretty good about that because of how they've built the bullpen over the last season and a half. So,
well, as a Rays fan, if there are any, people should feel good about that because that's the way they've constructed their roster.
Right.
I mean, that shouldn't scare them at all. That's how they've been going about their business, right?
It is. Yeah. And at least they have Charlie Morton, Blake Snell, and they've got this kid Glass now. If you haven't seen him pitch,
he's dynamic.
Wow, is he dynamic. So they have some guys that at least can give you the five innings. If you look at what happened to the Padres, when they got those guys hurt, they were shot because they have plenty of arms to come out of the bullpen, but you just can't keep doing it every night. So, like, well, what is the plan right now, Chase? Let's say you're man and you're Brian Snitker. We know who's pitching the first three games, and you're hoping you get innings from Anderson. He's been really good. He's a rookie, but, you know, I certainly like their chances of him giving him give him at least five innings, right? Maybe Kyle Wright can give him four or five. Can he step up his game? He's been pitching great. He's got the stuff. If he steps up, that's good. So you're good for the first three games. But then what do you do?
What did you make of Chip's assessment of Kyle Wright? That was pretty interesting.
Oh, that was excellent. Yeah.
Well, and
it looks like he's on his way.
It goes along with, you know, what we've been talking about, moving to the other side of the rubber and how that's helped him. I would think Josh Tomlin has to factor in at some point as being an option, you know, to give you four or five. I mean, he's a veteran, Darren. You know him well from his time with the Tribe. So I think that he'd probably have to be an option, and then Inouye possibly is the other one. But
I wouldn't feel good about running him.
I wouldn't either.
But those guys, Tomlin and Inouye, right? Inouye is a former Met, so I know him. Those guys are, at best, you're hoping to get them once through the lineup, maybe three innings, right? And that's about it. If they get twice through the lineup, then they're really giving you more than you think is realistic. And that's that's an issue.
How about the catch in the bullpen last night?
Yeah, Mark Melanson.
He can play. Melanson could play in the outfield. That was a nice catch.
I know. That was awesome.
That was pretty fun. He's like literally just standing there like he knew it was coming to him. He's just like, I got this. Boom.
Boom. Right. And my favorite was the guy that is, you know, in there in the bullpen. It's like high-fiving him, like, holy crap, what a catch.
He was all excited. I got this, man. I knew it the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that's apparent, Chase, and I know you noticed it too, I think Chip's point is well taken. Even the 10,000 fans or whatever the number is that are there, it's great to have people watching.
Oh,
and
awesome.
Man, the enthusiasm coming out of that Braves bullpen and that Braves dugout, this is a tight-knit team, and they decided to go. They're going to go with the loose approach. We're loose. We're the underdog. We're going to make some noise. We're going to have fun. It looks like it's contagious.
Anybody watch Freddie Freeman on SVP last night on SportsCenter?
I did.
He made a point to bring up the crowd. He made a point to talk about how – that's why I brought it up with Chip. Like he said that, you know, they understand that they've had to do what they've had to do, but players were sick of the crowd – you know, the fake crowd noise, and it was such a welcome sight. Yes, yeah. I've said it for weeks. Tired of it. It's
because they've overdone it. Fox and TBS. I mean, it's been way too loud. Like it's drowned out the commentators, and it's just if you're gonna do it, just make it barely noticeable. Don't have it just blaring. And
was that the
done.
First set of people in the brand new stadium of the Rangers, the home of the Rangers? Is that the first set of fans?
I think so.
Yeah.
To see a game there. Think about that. The first. You talking about a great trivia question. That stadium, let's say 10 years from now, you know, what was the first game that fans stepped into the new, what is it, Globe Life, whatever the heck it's called? Mm-hmm.
Globe Life Field.
Sure. What it was the first game, you know, and everybody's going to be like, who were the Rangers playing? Who was opening day 10 years ago? See, 2020, who did they have opening day? And you're going to forget all about it, and it's going to, you know, the answer is going to be Braves Dodgers. And they're going to be like, what?
And 11,000 was the attendance.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The first time that park was opened up to the fans was the National League Championship Series.
Did you see the wide shot that they did from, I guess it was the helicopter, that had all three stadiums?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was it was unreal.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Such a vast area. It's a big flat. You know, we've been there. It's so flat, mm-hmm. right? You can see for miles.
Yeah. Sure.
And so those places are all giant places, right? But it's like there's plenty of space in between. They've got there's got some amusement park there. I mean, there's plenty of room for almost everything. Yeah.
Six Flags is right there.
Yeah, Texas Live, which is a cool, like, entertainment venue that I think is like, in between the two baseball parks.
Remember how long it took us to walk to find our ride at the Rangers game? Yes. I mean, it felt like we walked, like, 5 miles just to get to a place where we could get the ride from the Uber or whatever we took.
Another visit, when Lauren and I went, we actually paid. You know, they have those people on bikes, and they pull up right to the stadium because there's no easy parking there, and so we had them. It was a hot day; it was like 98 degrees, and we had we saw the Red Sox and the Rangers, and we paid somebody to bike us back to our car. Which, what are they going to do with the old stadium? Are they keeping it or are they tearing it down?
Yeah, they've been using it. The XFL used it, obviously.
Right.
That's,
right. For a week.
But high school baseball championships and football, it was lined for football. I mean, they've been using it for different things. So I believe the plan as of now is to keep it.
It's not an issue of space. So if you can find use for it, you might as well keep
it
up and try to use it when you can. Yeah. Heck yeah.
We know the only reason that they replaced it was because they screwed up at the beginning and didn't, you know, account for the Texas heat. And so it was open air. And so they didn't want to play baseball in 100-degree weather in the summer. So it's a nice park. I mean, the three of us have been there. It's still got use.
Yeah.
That was my only time. But, you know, I thought about this. I mean, you just have, like, you could have, like, a complex going, thinking about bubbles.
Yeah.
I mean, you got two major league parks right next to
each other.
Right
there. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But, yeah, I think the plan – because I remember when we were there for the playoffs – and we were talking to, it was Paul Jones that used to work at Fox 17 that's now doing TV in Dallas. And I remember him saying, yeah, they're keeping it. And we were like, what? For what? Why? And he said the XFL, but then they had other things. So I don't know.
We'll see how long, though. I mean, most places, you know, they say they're going to keep it, and then eventually it gets torn down. But we'll see. But you're right. I mean, it's not like you walked in and went, boy, do they need a new home. You know, you didn't get that.
No.
I know I went to a day game in the middle of the summer and nobody wants to sit out. It's just, it's brutal, you know? And so everybody
doesn't look like
to,
there'd be a lot of shade.
Well, I mean, the reason we got the tickets that we did, because those tickets allowed you to go in certain areas, you know, which were air conditioning areas. And those areas were packed. You could barely get in because everybody was doing the same thing, right? You had certain sections, certain tickets allowed you to get into, I guess, the club levels or whatever they call it. But really nice, big air conditioning areas. And so it's just, you would see all these pockets of seats that were empty, and it wasn't because they were really empty. It was the people were inside. And so, you know, that was really it. But, it's an interesting complex right there. Like you said, Willie, it is very flat, and you can see forever. And you're kind of like up on a little hill, so you can see forever in that area. But that'll be a trivia question 10 years from now. First game that stadium hosted, it'll be hard. You'll have to be a true, true fan, right, to come up with Braves Dodgers 10 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to remember this time, though.
You can remember it now, but 10 years from now, will you? You know what I mean?
It'll be a good question. And I think the question of fans, how many is the right amount, we know is going to be a big one, along with, of course, everything we've been dealing with the whole time with just keeping the teams healthy and able to play. What do you do when somebody gets a positive test? Because think about all the different levels that are happening here. You have the NBA and the NHL watching, planning. When do we start next year? How many fans can we have? We can't do a bubble for an entire year. It's just not cost effective, right? You can't do it. We got to figure out ways to bring in revenue. We've got to pay our players. It's a big, big question. You have baseball that just went through an entire year with no fans. They're trying to figure out how many fans can they have for this. What about the World Series? And then what about next year? You heard Chip say it, right? It's a giant issue for them next year. College basketball, college football on Saturday. The Titans tonight trying to have fans for the first time. So how effective can it be done? How can we incrementally go up a little bit based on the caseload? I don't know, right? Because there are many that feel like as the weather gets colder, the caseload is going to be really tough to control, right? And I certainly think that stands to reason. But the amount of fans, how many can you get in there, keeping them safe, staying on top of everybody, it's a massive undertaking, just as we thought it would be. But it's so important to the whole system working, right? You got to have fans.
Absolutely.
Jeff Goodman is just put out on Twitter that the OVC will play a 20-game league slate this season. That's according to, I guess, the stadium was the first to report that. The OVC will play a 20-game league slate. That's this. I'm just reading the tweet this season. He just put that out in the last minute or two.
Is he saying that will be the extent of the schedule, or that's just the conference schedule? Because that's.
It sounds to me.
Don't they normally just play 18?
To me, it sounds like that is their schedule.
Okay,
that's what it's. I just reading that. Why would you else would you put that? You know, I mean, I don't think anybody expects them to be playing next month, right? Which is when they would be. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to play in December, considering they've already moved their football to spring. I think it's going to be condensed, so I'm taking that as they will play just those 20 games will be it.
Well, to do that, you would need to start in December to get 20 in, because remember how early their conference tournament generally is. They're one of the first. And to play 20 as opposed to 16 or 18, that's two extra weeks. So you would definitely need to start that in December. I can see that plan. Let's keep it condensed in our league and do the best we can to get all the games in. I wonder if they would have contingencies to meet at a couple sites and play more than one game with a bunch of teams. I know it's all been discussed. I remember we had Coach Alexander on to talk about a lot of ideas that have been thrown out there at the time they announced that the season won't start until after Thanksgiving. But this will be real interesting, just like everybody else, trying to come up with a plan to mitigate risk and have contingencies if and when there are stumbles in the schedule, which, as we find out, are pretty inevitable.
Real quick, the latest odds makers, the books, who will be the next head coach fired in the NFL? As we know, Quinn was fired over the weekend in Atlanta. Who is the favorite for the next head coach?
Adam Gase.
Willie.
Well, that's got to be it.
It's not it. That's why I'm bringing it up. Isn't that amazing? He's actually second. There's someone actually more of a favorite than Adam Gase.
To be fired. Goodness.
Wow. More than all right, so
Mike Zimmer
is fifth on the
Patricia.
List. Matt Patricia, that's a good one, right? Yes, he's third.
What?
Yeah.
Anthony Lynn.
Anthony Lynn is fourth.
We're all right.
Doug Marrone.
No.
Doug Marrone is the favorite according to
really?
The odds makers.
No way.
I know. That's what I
Okay.
I know. I was like, what? Over Gase and Patricia? And wow. Lynn, by the way, Lynn's dead man walking. He's not going to make it.
Oh, yeah.
It's so crazy to watch them. It seems like.
By the way, they cannot win a close game.
That's it. They're
they
in every game.
They cannot win a close game.
They are in every game unexpectedly. You don't expect them to be in position to beat the Saints in New Orleans or beat the Chiefs. But that's exactly what they've had. It's been a toss-up.
They totally gagged that away last night.
Man, I was watching Elijah's tweets. By the way, we have to talk about your teams because I I feel like there could be a little bit of a front runner thing going here, Lakers, Saints, but we'll get to that later.
I've been a Saints fan since 2003. I liked them because they were bad as a
okay.
kid.
Okay, so all right.
I'll defend
fair.
Myself on
that
one.
That's fair. But I was watching your tweets last night through this whole game. I'm like, it's Drew Brees, man. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's Drew Brees.
Drew Brees is starting to show a lot of age.
I know. Yeah, he'll
Lots
be on the TV. He'll be ready to report to NBC. At the for the offseason.
We're going
to
actually talk about that. Aging quarterbacks in this league. Phillip Rivers, anybody been watching him? Drew
Noodle.
Brees. We're going to get into that, right? We're going to get into that in the second hour. But when we come back to start the second hour, we're going to have to Buffalo. We're going to learn a little bit about tonight's opponent for the Titans. Learn a little bit about what the Bills have been up to in preparation for this game. We do that next on Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.